Are you searching for the ultimate transparent Nashville drive tone, but have limited pedalboard real estate and a limited pedal budget? Well, Nobels have you covered, because the new Nobels ODR Mini is a mini pedal version of the world-famous Nobels ODR 1 for less than £70. Delivering everything from pushed clean amp tone to gain-filled stacks, the Nobels ODR has been a hidden gem in the world of guitar overdrive since its invention in 1993. This pedal is guaranteed to be a big part of your sound, but a small part of your pedal board. Available from all good guitar shops, or visit nobels.de for more info. Check out Revan Guitar's incredible range of artist signature models. With nearly as many artist line guitars as they do in their standard range, there is something for every type of player. The Greg Koch Signature Gristlemaster and the Pete Anderson E-Sider T are both examples of wonderful twists on a classic T-style guitar. The Pete Anderson offers a more traditional appearance, but with plenty of hot rodding going on under the hood. Modifications include a chambered body, stainless steel saddles, compound radius fretboard from 10 to 14 inches, embossed knobs, and a push-pull phase switch for loads of tonal options, whilst the Greg Koch has the very modern Fishman Fluence pickups and a gorgeous non-traditional raised center ridge. These subtle alterations result in an incredibly cool looking to die for blend of retro and modern. Both guitars offer different but wonderful T-style alternatives at Revan's usual fantastic price point. Check them out, along with the rest of Revan's substantial range of guitars and basses at RevanGuitars.com. I wit a itcher na guitar nerds. Jest MP a nimgos pod a chem Joe Branton. I doi un cha yum do. My yeah. Matt Knight.
Hammy.
Mark Packham.
267 episodes is too much.
IJ Cross.
Hi.
Yes, that's right. Pam. And welcome to your charming, wonderful Polish edition of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Ha ha! That's two languages down.
How many left to go? Yeah.
I don't know. How many languages are there?
A lot. 267.
Well, then I guess we will finish this in 267 episodes time.
We were just talking about how great it is that when you search for guitar in podcasts in Spotify, that Guitar Nerds comes up second. I'm wondering what having non-English language introductions is going to do to that.
Joe Branton, apparently they estimate there are 6,500 languages spoken today.
Okay.
None of which were one of the ones that Joe just did on the intro.
Why don't we do it in Busu, which is only spoken by 8 people worldwide?
Wow.
Well, if we can get in contact with one of them and get a translation,
this
is assuming they speak another language.
No, it's a podcast listener.
What?
It's not.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you do one in Simlish? Is that possible?
What's Simlish?
It is the language spoken in the popular computer game The Sims.
Yes.
So, I don't know if you've seen, but there is a fella whose name I've now forgotten who's been doing a live talk show in Animal Crossing. I'm just wondering whether, brilliant, you know, we can make that our live streamed offering. Should we do the Guitar Nerds podcast in Animal Crossing?
On a similar note, I saw something on the internet this week about people who, like a small tech company, who got bored of doing their meetings on Zoom, so they started doing them on Red Dead Redemption.
Nice.
they were sitting around a campfire, all logged into Red Dead Live or whatever, and that's how they did their meetings.
That's brilliant.
Oh, that's an excellent idea. Maybe we could start our own platform, that like an RPG of Guitar Nerds. Where people could join and talk, and you could have your own avatar
you know, with like a guitar strapped to their back.
I could be like that guy in Skyrim. It would be like, I used to be an adventurer like you until I had to do this stupid podcast every week.
Yes, well.
You've done this stupid podcast every week for 7 years, Mark. Yeah. I'm not really sure. I don't even remember what life was like before this podcast.
It's I feel like ago. I've been locked down into doing a podcast for, 7 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. But legally, you are bound to do this now as well, so... There's no way out, I'm afraid. Not without hefty sort of fines, should you miss a week, as we all know. Anyway, this is the part of the podcast where I introduce our new patrons. So welcome, Gareth Bird, Sam Brooksby, Richard Kendall, Robert Crawford, and Grumpy Mike, who have all joined the podcast at various tiers. So welcome and thank you for becoming a patron. You too, listener, can become a patron of the Guitar Nerds podcast at patreon.com/guitar nerds, where there's loads of awesome new stuff going up every week. This last week me and Matt finished our series The Pedals That Made Us, where we were recounting our adventures over the last 20 years in effects pedals. And this week will be the first episode in a new solo series by Mark Packham, called Gear There and Everywhere, where you're recounting the Beatles' evolution of equipment.
Sort of. It's sort of little stories about like famous and not so famous Beatles bits of equipment. So yeah, this week on episode one, we're talking about the two 61 Sonic Blue Strats that are used primarily in the kind of mid-60s period. It kind of covers how they got them, why they needed them, what they're used on, what did they sound like, and where they are now.
Oh, that's very cool. I always thought those guitars were especially cool and underrated Beatles instruments.
Mark, have you talked about your Beatles discography playthrough that you're currently...
Did we talk about that? I can't remember if we talked.
I don't think we did, because you told me about it over text.
So I'm going through a bit of a Beatles phase, which is, you know, pretty
much... Which is what lasted 30 years.
Yeah, happens all the time. But yeah, obviously I'm doing the podcast. But yeah, for the last, 3 or 4 weeks, I've been listening to a podcast on Spotify that is every song written by the Beatles in order before and after they were the Beatles. So yeah, I'm 4 weeks in. Hang on, let me check. I'm up to 1996, I think.
Oh, that sounds like a dark time period.
Hang on,
made it through the '80s though.
Well, I'll tell you what, actually, Matt, do you know what's actually worse? Hang on, I'm trying to find out which year I'm on, because I've just started Standing Stone by Paul McCartney, which is a classical album. Second original music classical album, 1997, October 97, that's where I'm up to. Matt, to go back to your previous statement, the 80s actually aren't as bad as you think. Once you get to something like Tug of War by Paul McCartney, what year is that? I'm guessing it's probably like 86 or something. Oh no, it's 1982. That's actually all right. And also, caveat to this, none of the 80s stuff by Ringo Starr is on Spotify, so I can't listen to that, and that's probably a saving grace for the 80s. The stuff that's really bad is the mid-70s onwards, I would say. Like,
why is that? Because that was an incredible time period for music outside of the Beatles.
Primarily, the only good albums, I would say, from the 70s are Paul McCartney...
Rumours by Fleetwood Mac?
No, I'm talking about the Beatles specifically. So you've got... let's go back to the start of the decade. So you've got John Lennon's... In fact, this isn't even the 70s. This is the late 60s. You've got 1, 2, 3 experimental noise albums by John Lennon.
God, they sound great. They sound absolutely brilliant.
So you've got...
They're all great.
You've got 1968's Unfinished Music Number 1, Two Virgins. You've got 1969's Unfinished Music Number 2, Life of the Lions, and then the Wedding album. Now, alongside those, you've also got the two instrumental noise albums by George Harrison, which are called Wonderwall Music and Electronic Sound.
I listened to one of them when you recommended it to me, and you were like, this is so awful, you're gonna really like it. And I did like it. I liked it a lot, actually. So yeah. I might just disregard anything from any of the eras that you say is good.
I am,
and
I
might just listen to the 70s stuff.
So after that, I mean, basically you've got a couple of good albums. Well, you've got like one or two good albums by all of them. So John Lennon, Plastic Ono Band is a good album. Paul McCartney's Ram is good. And then
is that the one? Because it's not Paul McCartney by this point. It's William Shears Campbell. But is this the point where...
No.
Is this the one where there's a toy car on the front? Or the red dots on the front?
No, that's the first solo album, McCartney, right. McCartney, which is pretty good, but it's got a lot of filler.
That cover's got a lot of hidden meaning in it about the death of Paul McCartney and his replacement,
sure.
William
Mark,
Shears Campbell.
Sure. Have you got to Strawberries, Ocean, Ships, Forest yet?
Yeah, I've gone
techno album by The Fireman, which
is
Paul McCartney.
I've gone past that. That's the first Fireman album, which I think is before the anthology. So I think it's...
Wait, what is Fireman?
It's Paul McCartney and a producer who's now... And Youth, the producer, band called The Fireman. They had an album called, Strawberries, Oceans, Ships, Forest, which is... I can't find what year that is. Hang on, let's have a look.
I'm on it right now. It's 1993.
Yeah.
But Youth was in Killing Joke.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
But he's just he's a producer, so he's done a whole bunch of stuff. We're getting far off the track. What I will say is there's some really good stuff at the start of the 70s. By the mid-70s, you start getting things like Mind Games and Walls and Bridges by John Lennon, which are bad. You also, George Harrison has released some very bad stuff. I would suggest that even the ones that people like are not that good. And there's also some Paul McCartney tat as well. In fact, the only person who's doing, fairly consistently good stuff at the beginning of the 70s is Ringo Starr, because he just goes, look, I'm just going to do a load of cover versions of music that your granny would like. Here it is. I've got a really good band behind me, like a big band. I can't sing that well, but I'll give it my best go. If you want to listen to this, the music that he was putting out, I would say, is not dissimilar to that of Chaz and Dave at the beginning of the 70s. If that's what you're into, then I would suggest give Ringo a chance.
Wow. That is almost definitely the worst advice on listening to post-Beatles I have ever heard. And you heard it here first.
I'll keep you updated.
What was the movie that you text me about a John Lennon and Yoko Ono movie? And I don't think we should read out the description on the podcast, but you should point people towards the Wikipedia page.
When
they're like, not at work or on a work computer or anything.
I just need to Google John Lennon Yoko Ono art film. It's called Self Portrait. If you want if you want a real deep dive, just investigate John Lennon Yoko Ono's film Self Portrait.
I cannot stress this highly enough. Do not look at this Wikipedia page at work. Do not look at this Wikipedia page whilst your children are around, but definitely do look at this Wikipedia page, because the description is absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if a pop star were to do it now, you would think it would be a scandal, I would say. It would be a big thing. But because the 60s was what it was, it's another thing entirely.
I see. Well, that's...
Joe's on there now. He's on.
Yeah,
he's reading.
I'm on there now. Yeah, this is great.
Joe's just ordered the DVD.
I've just got it. I just got it on VHS. There's something more seedy about VHS, so I'm going to get it on that. Anyway, this month we're also we need to mention that we are teaming up with Ashdown to bring you a giveaway, a double giveaway, in fact. So, listener, you have the chance to win for two separate listeners to win. The new Ashdown floor-mounted pedal-based amplifiers, the Newt and the Ant, the guitar and the bass, 200-watt pedal board-based amplifier. So all you've got to do to win that is head over to either our Facebook or our Instagram, find the entry post, and follow the steps on there to enter. The competition's open worldwide, and we'll be announcing the winner right here on the podcast on the 10th of June. We record 2 days in advance from release, so you'll have until the 8th of June to enter. But yes, that's going to be exciting. Two absolutely fantastic products. This week, I was running the straight into a 212 cab, the Ashdown Newt, which whilst it's an amp in its own right, as in it has, you know, a 3-band EQ, it's just a master output. So it's just a perfectly clean 200 watt platform. I was running the Origin Effects Revival Drive Compact into the front of that and using it more as a preamp, as sort of the preamp to the new, and it sounded absolutely fantastic. I think the Ashdown New is one of those products that, depending on the rest of your setup, can really bring to life some tasteful preamps that you have to kind of make your own really custom sounding, you know, amplifier without having any of the coloring that might come with a regular amp. You can really kind of make your own thing. It's very cool. So yes, go and enter the competition and see if you win. I guess it's next week, isn't it? Is it next week or the week after?
I don't know. You run the competitions.
I don't know when it is. 10th of June is
two weeks' time. My goodness. How about that? Ugh. Well, yes.
I've lost all sense of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Matt Knight, speaking of time, you've been getting up very early because you've been starring in your own little internet episodes.
Yes. I was just like, does that sound good? So I'm doing a series of live streams with Boss President Yoshi Ikegami. We decided to... I think Yoshi kind of decided there's a lot of good stories to tell. And, you know, I think a lot of people, like, you've all met him. You know, he's an awesome guy. And he's been with Roland since 1976, I think. Wow. Maybe earlier than that. It might be 1975. So, you know, Roland was only, I think, about 3 years old when he started. And... we wanted to basically do a short live stream every day, every week, that was only like 10 or 15 minutes. It was answering questions that people could put on the Facebook page, the Boss Facebook page. And then Yoshi's also going to tell some stories about stuff that he's engineered. I mean, I didn't realize that he engineered Boss's first DSP chip. Like the chip that basically kind of ended up being in pretty much everything they made after that. That was like, wow. the reverb algorithms that Yoshi created in 1980 something were like the reverb algorithms that they were still using today.
So in the like RV5 and RV6.
But wow. obviously the processors have got, but the algorithm itself is obviously the same algorithm. But also the fact that one thing we touched upon very briefly was that Yoshi created the SDE 3000, which was a rack delay that was used by loads of session people in the 80s, that ended up having a particular chip in it that turned out would fit in a compact, which made the DD2, which was the first ever digital delay pedal. So Yoshi in part is responsible for digital delay pedals, which is, wow, a really bizarre thought, because that's just a thing that we're used to now. But yeah, it was never a thing before. And then he made that rack unit and that led on to the compact. So we're sort of discussing a bit of that, sort of getting used to talking on camera at crazy early times in the morning. I have to get up at 6:30. It's going to be roughly about 7:30 UK time every Wednesday on Facebook, but they'll be archived onto Facebook afterwards.
I'm going to start asking you like really complicated questions, because I know that you've
we already got some live. So the main thing is, because we're doing in such a short space of time, we're putting up the theme at the end of that week's episode for the following week. So this week we're doing stuff on DS1 and some of the early compacts. I think we're going to do a different theme every week. And then, yeah, Yoshi's going to add some stuff in as well. So definitely a good chance if you're up that early to log in. If not, you can watch it. You can watch it later on. But if you've got questions that you might want answering, head over to the Boss Facebook page and ask some questions, and I will be asking them directly to Yoshi. So we'll be getting some pretty solid answers from the man at the top. But yeah, it's been good fun. And he, Yoshi, has just got some crazy stories.
And he just knows everyone, doesn't he?
He does. He once pulled out his phone. We were talking, and it was a picture of him with Dave Navarro. I was like, when did you meet Dave Navarro? It's like mid-90s at some point. I'm nice. Just like, because he was boss president. He became boss president about 6 years ago. Before that, he was head of production. And then before that, he was boss president again?
Previously.
But that's the crazy thing. You know, he started as just... he worked on the production line, built Space Echoes, built the early Roland guitar synths, and then taught, basically then worked as an engineer. But they wouldn't let him move to engineering. He had to teach himself at night by working with the engineers in overtime. So he taught himself to be an engineer while working in the production department, and then got assigned a desk. And they were like, oh, you can move over to engineering, and that's how he became an engineer.
Wow.
So it's wow. You know, it's a crazy story. So it's definitely, hopefully we'll be able to get a few more of those sort of you know, nuggets of awesome information out of him over the next few weeks. But it's something that we're going to run, well, indefinitely for the time being, I think. So definitely worth asking your questions on there.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds really cool.
I'm just going to consistently ask when the BED1 is coming out.
BED1. We did see, didn't someone post in the group, or Jay, did you send a text to someone who'd done some pedal?
I saw on the Mattaverse Instagram page, someone has made a bedspread or a duvet or a comforter or something that is just a picture of someone's pedal board, and there was a Mattaverse Air Trash, I think, on there, plus a bunch of like other cool stuff. I mean, it was a real who's who of effects pedals on this person's bedspread. And yeah, I sent it over to the Guitar Nerd group chat, just being like, Matty, someone's getting one step closer to that BED1. It's you know, if boss wants to consider themselves the kind of, you know, conversation mover, the real game changer, you're really running out of time to bring this product out.
I know. I might just have to stitch it myself. I'll have to learn how to sew.
That'd be great. You should do that. Now, this week, I took delivery of, or last week, I took delivery of a lovely amplifier. The winner of, was it the winner? One of the winners of Gear of the Year 2019. One of the runners-up for Gear of the Year 2019. The Fender Tonemaster Twin Reverb. And so this is the first time I've got to actually sit down with it, you know, on its own. Because very much when we do the Gear of the Year stuff, you know, Jay had the amplifier for us all to try, but it's been lovely getting to have some quality time with this amplifier. I mean, this is for £1,000, this is like the best £1,000 you can spend on an amplifier. This thing is fantastically good. I am completely, whilst on Gear of the Year, I was took some real convincing about a digital version of the legendary twin, because weight is not a thing that actually matters. But this is an incredible amp. So the thing is, since I've been recording at home, I've been trying lots of different things over the last few weeks to record some guitar stuff. Now, I'm fine with bass stuff. I have a tried and tested way of recording bass. I know it's going to sound good, and I know I can set it up easily every time. But for guitar, I've been struggling to replicate a Fender Blues Junior with the reverb tank sort of maxed out, and just run and you know, running that loud enough for it to work. And I can't really do that at home. You know, I've done it a little bit in the day, but I want to just be able to record into the small hours, and I can't do that with a Blues Junior at an appropriate volume. But of course, the Fender Twin Reverb sounds fantastic. Like, has that wonderful, gorgeous sort of Fendery reverb, and has direct recording in the back with built-in IR cab sims, and you get a choice of a couple of them. So it's kind of a complete all-in-one solution. It's your, this is your Fender live amplifier, but also your Absolute recording at home. I appreciate it's very big, but for something that absolutely sounds every bit as good as a loud cranked amplifier, I think this thing's great.
Yeah, I was kind of blown away by it when we had it for Gear of the Year. I mean, it basically is, you know, as we talked about at the time, it's for people who want a twin, but they don't want to carry around a incredibly heavy twin. Yeah. And, yeah. You know, I think there's always going to be a time and a place for an amp like that. You know, the twin, you know, back in the day, I used to sell loads of them. And I think really the kind of trend towards like smaller amps has been primarily because of a weight thing. You know, people that still gig, you know, I think, you know, having an amp that's a bit bigger is not a problem. It really is just the carting it around. And as much as you say, Joe, weight isn't a thing, I think for a lot of people it actually is. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing like a twin. You know, you can turn them up super loud and they've got a very distinct sound. If you can do that with something that you can actually lift without needing some sort of like open back truck to cart it around, then yeah, I mean, I'm all in.
For me, it's just been, you know... I know it seems like a weird thing because you can do this with a plugin, but for me, one of the big advantages of this has been the home recording side of it. It actually sounding as good as it does direct in is kind of a big thing. I've been messing around with so much stuff, with like Helix stuff. I've bought plugins and really tried to sort of recreate the sort of loud mic'd sound of my Blues Junior, and I haven't been able to come close, and this really, you know, does
when
sound
you
fantastic.
When you go direct out, does it cut the internal speaker?
It can do, yeah.
Okay, so you can have both, because I think that's always the problem for me, and that's why I like things like you know, the Tone Master is I just want to hear the sound of it through a cab.
Yeah, I can't stand listening to guitar through my monitors.
Yeah,
I just can't get any feel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's funny because obviously I'm trying to do a bit more recording and understand and do a bit more research into how people do it and you know, messing around with a few things myself because I've never really done it. And the guys on that pedal show are doing a similar thing, and they were talking in a blog this week about, I think Mick was saying that he literally just can't play guitar through monitors, and I feel the same. It's like, I love the sound of it. I've got a GT1000 at home at the moment through the monitors, and I'm like, it, you know, it feels good and it sounds good, but I'm like, I'd much rather just plug it into the effects loop return of like my Olsen amp and hear it through a cab and then just mic the cab up.
It's exactly that. That's exactly the problem that I was having with anything that I was running and just hearing it in the monitors. My guitar playing is so dynamics dependent that just not being able to, you know, not being able to really hear that through the monitors, and it always, everything sounds weird and subby through monitors when you're recording in. It does to me in my setup. So having this ability to hear it through an app, obviously, you know, that's something that I do have to sacrifice if I'm recording late at night. But also having the, you know, the varied attenuation. On the back is very, very handy. I've never been so thankful for being able to change like the output power on something since being sort of tied up with the output power of a Blues Junior sort of for home use.
Yeah, I think and you know, as we said on Gear of the Year, the great thing is it's just a twin. It's like nothing's been changed. It feels the same, it sounds the same, it responds the same. It is just lighter, and I think that's just a great thing about it. The fact that you can attenuate it is amazing. Obviously, twins are known for ridiculous high headroom anyway, but it's just it just feels the same as a normal twin. I think that's what's so, you know, they've not tried to mess around with a winning formula, I think.
Introducing possibly the ultimate recording solution for guitarists everywhere, the Two Notes Captor X. Playing your tube amp in a great sounding room with an exceptional choice of perfectly matched speaker cabinet and microphones is truly joyous and an unparalleled experience. The Torpedo Captor X is for tube amp lovers who crave this every time they play, no matter the environment. Play your tube amp at its sweet spot and control your volume with the attenuator anywhere. You can even enjoy your 100-watt rig in silence with an immersive headphone experience. Fed up with lifting heavy cabinets, inconsistent sound and stage volume issues? Go direct to the PA and audio interface with studio-grade cabinet simulations. Wish to explore a legendary backline of speaker cabinets and microphones? Pair Torpedo Captor X with your phone, tablet or computer using Torpedo Remote. No other compact reactive load box offers such universal control of the miking chain. And with dual miking per cabinet, you may never need to use a real mic again. Check out the Two Notes Torpedo Captor X at 2-notes.com. Guitar Nerds is brought to you in association with Faith Guitars. Based right here in the UK, Faith Guitars are designed by British guitar luthier Patrick James Eggle, who has been hand-building guitars for decades for some of the biggest names in the business. Founded in 2002, Faith Guitars have been voted the UK's best acoustic guitars 5 times in a row by both the public and panels of music industry experts, so you can be confident in your new Faith guitar. Like all quality acoustics, Faith guitars are made of all solid tone wood, so you can be sure they'll start off sounding great and improve year on year. Faith don't use laminated woods, but you'll be pleased to know that despite the all solid tone woods, the superb specification and handmade construction, Faith guitars are still affordable, with prices starting at around £450 or $600. Discover the range at faithguitars.com and then visit one of the many UK or European retailers to try them for yourself. But hold up! If you're in the USA or Canada, you can buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com, and by using the coupon code NERDS at the checkout, you can get an exclusive 10% discount. So, in the UK and Europe, check out the guitars at your local dealer or faithguitars.com. But for North American listeners, buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com and use the coupon code NERDS for a special 10% off at the checkout. That's USA coupon code NERDS at the checkout. Faith Guitars, award-winning acoustics designed right here in the UK. One of the most popular Ernie Ball Music Man models, the John Petrucci Majesty, is being expanded with 4 brand new striking finishes. Now offered in Pink Sand, Red Phoenix, Smoked Pearl, and Ember Glow, the 2020 Majesty features a lightweight Akume body, signature Damasio Rainmaker and Dreamcatcher pickups, and an onboard piezo bridge system that gives the guitar a focused and highly versatile palette of tones. Head to music-man.com to learn more. That's music-man. Now, back to the show.
I think if you know, obviously I still, the Blues Junior is, or the Boss Guitar is still kind of the two amplifiers of choice for guitar nerds, I guess. But if you want, like, the best Fender clean amp that you can possibly have, then this for £1,000, this combo is just absolutely completely unmatchable. I'm so utterly, like, blown away by it, by just spending a couple of days with it. I think it's a really, really fantastic product. So, listener, definitely worth your time if you want something clean and cool with loads of recording flexibility and home use flexibility. This is an absolutely wonderful solution, gentlemen. Shall we talk about some news? Should we do some news?
Yes.
Yes.
Very well.
News.
First up, we're going to talk about the new tune. We're going to carry on talking about recording. We're going to guitar recording, as I guess it's very topical at the moment with everyone being stuck in and recording at home. Let's talk about the Two Notes Torpedo Captor X. Which we're lucky enough to have been sent this week. Obviously, Two Notes are advertising on the podcast at the moment, but the Two Notes Captor X is an absolutely fantastic solution for people who want to use their valve heads. They're valve amps and like whole live setups. It's the perfect cab replacement. So Two Notes obviously have done tons of you know, home use preamps and power amp style things and cab simulators in the past, but the Captor X is kind of a culmination of all of that in one. It's a very similar idea to the Oxbox and the what was the bus one called?
Tube Amp Expander.
Why do I always forget that? And the Tube Amp Expander. What's cool about the Torpedo Captor X is that it is in a really pint-sized package. So this is something you can fit right onto your desktop. And then it works with either an app that you can have on your phone or tablet, or you can have the desktop software in order to expand your control of the unit. But you can also load individual presets into it, so it does work independently. So essentially explaining what the Captor X is this is a load box. So you would run your real valve head straight into this, and you can use this as an attenuator live, or you know, as a complete load box, and then you can run that out. There are several different ways that you can wire this up, but you can essentially, for recording, run that straight out into your interface, and then using the software, the Torpedo remote, you can then really hone that cab. So you can choose from a massive range of cabinets that come built in. There are also more cabinets that you can get on the Two Notes website that you can add. And it does some really cool things. So at all times, you've got like the option of you always have the option of having two cabs, which you can then control the stereo reverb for. There's a load of different mic choices. So you can choose mics, you can choose mic placement. The stereo reverb is very, very nice as well. And then it also has the option of doubling. So you can, it's called their twin tracker. So it's an automatic double tracker, that creates, like a virtual guitarist. So it varies the timing and the attack, real time, to kind of give you those subtle differences you would have by doubling up a riff.
I don't need a virtual guitarist to have someone there to vary the attack and the, I do that all by myself.
I was going to say, can it create a virtual guitarist that means I don't have to play? And it will I mean, that will ultimately make my sound better if someone else just does it for me.
Yes, that is almost definitely the case. But I really like everything about this product. I really liked the app. I really liked the way it was set up. I liked how much I could control. It was easy. You know, when I got this, I plugged in my Ashdown CTM 30, my little stubby. So it's a 30 watt all valve bass head, and then, you know, ran that into the Captor, out into my interface, and I could choose things like, you remember those big old acoustic 360 cabs?
Yeah.
Remember those, Mark?
Yeah,
that had the big sort of sub bit.
Yeah.
You know, the bit, I don't know what you call it, but they were, you can use cabs like that, and just being able to flick through mics that were mics that I knew as well, which was great. And you know, doubling obviously wasn't something I especially needed to use for bass, but the amount of tone shaping that you can do inside of the app was very, very useful. And this thing is like £600.
I like the idea of the doubled bass, or just a double bass. Just get a double bass.
Just get a double.
You don't even need this, mate. You don't even need an amp. Just get a double bass. They're really loud.
Yeah. Well, yes, exactly. really, really cool product.
It's reactive load as well, obviously, rather than just the load box. So it's mimicking the actual impedance curve of a speaker, the sort of negative feedback between the speaker cable and the amp, rather, and responding as such, rather than just a load box like one of the old Marshall power breaks or whatever. So your amp responds like it's actually plugged into a speaker cab, which makes a big difference, rather than just a standard load box, because it's the way that your amp responds being plugged into a speaker that makes it feel and sound the way it does. And then it's obviously taking a tap out of that, and then you can obviously go XLR outs, or you can get a speaker out into a cab. I like the fact there's an attenuation switch. You can go between three levels of attenuation, 38, 20, or zero, if you just want it exactly the same volume. So obviously if you're using it, I don't know whether people would take this out live, because they've obviously got some racked versions that you potentially use live. I think maybe just in the studio, it's probably more people are going to use it. But the fact that you can go down at that level is pretty handy. But yeah, it seems like it's got some good options on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's you know, for £600, having this as a solution for people who don't want to use digital amps for home recording, you know, to have this ability to, of course, because this also means that you can now use your full rig for practice at home. It has a headphones out as well, so you can use those, the IRs coming out of your amp head straight into your ears, which I think is really handy as well. Just the fact that I could now have, oh, here's my full amp rig set up in the corner of my room with my full pedal board, and I can plug in this Torpedo Captor X and then have a complete recording ability with my existing live rig is very good. And for people who don't like sort of digital screens, and I appreciate there's a lot of, you know, screens to go to control it on the app and stuff, but people who don't like controlling their amplifier with digital screens, I think this is great. I liked just being able to shape my sound by changing the controls on the front of my amp rather than hopping through the sort of the flipping 20 additional screens that every plugin and VST adds to every amp that they've imitated, and things to be honest, say stuff like sag. I don't care about that. I just want a 3-band EQ and a gain control. And I love that it kind of puts the ability for me to control my sound like that back in my hand.
To be honest, you're going to be looking at your phone anyway, so you might as well be looking at the app that gives you a better sound. Like, you're going to be playing guitar, you're going to be checking Twitter, you're going to be looking at Instagram. Why not just also have the controls on there? Easy.
Yeah.
And just being able to save your presets on there, and even like things like being able to use it live as well, like running to front of house from it while still having your cab on stage, so you can bring your presets, which you know sound great, to every gig and kind of control what's coming out of the front of house, I think is really cool, really useful as well.
Nice.
A very cool product. But yes, next up, Jay Cross, why don't we talk about more guitar auctions?
I tell you what, I bloody love a guitar auction. One of my favorite discoveries of last year was when we stumbled across that that auction of, who was it? It was
Dave Gilmore.
No, not Dave Gilmore. The one that I watched live. I can't even remember who it was now, but I watched it live and it was just absolutely fantastic. It was so interesting watching all this stuff just get sold and all the people that were involved in it. And I just think it's bloody great.
That's how auctions work generally. Stuff gets sold.
Stuff gets sold. People bid on it, you know, little bit of this, little bit of that.
It's very you. The Cockney geezer inside you loves an auction.
Come on, son.
The Cockney geezer inside him.
Yeah, you know, the inner right. Cockney geezer that he that Jay possesses is it comes out when he looks at an auction.
Yeah, he hides somewhere by the inner Mockney geezer, the outer Mockney geezer. That's that's really got the front line here. But yes, we have seen a bunch of high profile artists' signature guitars, or like, you know, big popular guitars, go up for auction recently. The Dave Gilmore one was big. There's been a couple of Kurt Cobain ones over the last 6 or 12 months or so. This is arguably as big as any of those, in that one of Prince's most iconic guitars is going up for auction. So this is one of the original 1984 Cloud guitars. This is one of the blue ones. The first round of these, there was only 4 made of the very first round, and they brought in the article that we were reading about. It is absolutely fantastic. They bring in the Cloud guitar expert John Woodland. So I was like, I recognise that name. Now, the cloud guitar expert, John Woodland, is, of course, John Woodland of Mastery Bridges fame. So he, like, designed the Mastery Bridge, I think.
Wow.
But yeah, so they've just got him listed in this article as cloud guitar expert, which I hope is what he's changed his LinkedIn job title to. but yeah, so basically this is one of the ones that Prince played more than most, and it's very, very exciting to see it go up for auction. One of the previous cloud guitars sold for $700,000 in 2017, and actually I think the market has probably changed a fair amount since then. This is expected to sell for upwards of 500 grand, but with the Kurt Cobain guitar going for a lot of money, with those Dave Gilmour guitars going for a lot of money, with the Dave Gilmour cases going for a lot of money, I think that things have changed significantly since 2017, and I reckon that this will go for quite a lot of money.
Maybe they've all run out of money, though. They're like, oh, man, I bought all those David Gilmour hard cases. I can't afford the Prince guitar now. You never know.
Yeah, but this one in particular was played on the 1984 Purple Rain tour. They reckon that it was played when he was on Saturday Night Live, when Prince was on Saturday Night Live, on the Arsenio Hall show. So, you know, there's a lot of prestige behind this guitar, and I think it will be exciting to see what happens. You know, this is just another one of these guitars that disappears into the realms of just unimaginable money.
Can anyone bid?
Yeah.
Yeah? So I could just go on bid?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know...
You are legally bound if you accidentally put 800,000 rather than 80,000 or 80.
Or 8 quid. Yeah, yeah.
Should I drink a bottle of whiskey and go onto the auction website?
Almost certainly not.
Oh, that would be
just
awesome.
Reading the article about it, they think it's basically the Prince guitar that will raise the most. Like, in terms of the cloud guitars, this is the one. So yeah, that one that sold before for 700,000, this should beat that quite
significantly. You would expect it would beat that, even if it wasn't for the kind of change in market conditions and the change in demand that there seems to have been recently for, you know, big iconic guitars.
It's I was watching, so a lot of obviously, like, big bands have been putting up like live concerts on their YouTube channel, and the Prince have just put one up of them performing in around the Purple Rain tour, and the band is just fantastic. But sometimes you forget how good. If you haven't listened to Prince in a while, just go back and listen to his second record, which is just Prince stuff, and how good the guitar playing is and how good the guitar sounds are.
Mate, I've got about another 15,000 Beatles songs to listen to before I can listen to anything else.
And I sent it to you guys, but for everyone out there listening, if you have never seen it, go and watch the Prince live at the George Harrison tribute concert, where at the end he throws his guitar in the air and it literally disappears. It's the most amazing clip ever. Like, I think his roadie is like hanging above the stage or something, because he literally throw it and then he just walks off and the guitar never lands behind him.
That was one of his fantastic things, was his ability to, because he had a guy employed just to catch his guitar. So he'd do it all the time at all of his shows. There are some wonderful live performances of Prince doing that in various different, throwing it in various different directions. Like, every time he does it, it looks like something that you shouldn't be able to do in reality, and still he manages to flawlessly do it, and it's caught perfectly as well.
Yeah,
so it's,
but obviously, like, amazing musician, amazing guitar player, and just, he loved guitars. That's the other thing. He loved, like, gear and, like, guitars. I mean, he played some absolutely mad guitars. Loved Boss pedals. What can I say? Bloody best.
He did. Only had, it was everything on his board.
I think back in the 80s, I think one of his pedal boards was just a Crybaby and six Boss pedals in a BCB-60.
You couldn't buy anything else, though. That was the thing.
Oh,
the 80s.
Those were the days.
Yeah.
yes. But yeah, I think I was talking to my friend Vince, who I work with, who saw Prince at the Roundhouse, said he played for like 3 hours until they were literally like, you cannot play anymore. And he was like known as a legend of just like playing a massive gig, like 3 hours, and then being like, right, who's coming to the after party? And then went off and did another 2 hour gig at like a bar somewhere.
That's crazy.
And he did that all the time because Paisley Park was a venue. And he'd just go like, right, I'm throwing a gig tonight. And then just like open the doors and people could come along. It's just mad. But yeah, I think after every main, when he did the O2, I think after every gig, he then did another gig like in the evening at like till like 3 or 4 in the morning. He just loved to play guitar. Imagine being in his backing band. No, you'd just be like, oh man, I really need a break.
Has there been a documentary yet? Because like, I don't really like Prince's music. It just doesn't really jive with me. It, you know, it's like, it's not my, it's not the thing that I would listen to.
Listen, if it's not something made post the Beatles in 1972 to 1976, I'm just not interested.
I only listen to Beatles solo experimental noise albums now, sorry. But it's one of those things where it's happened in the past to me where I've thought, oh, I don't really like this artist, I'm not really that fussed by it. And then I've watched a documentary about it and I'm like, actually, I'm kind of into it. And, you know, I feel that he has got an interesting enough story that probably a kind of, you know, prestige documentary is going to be made about him. And it will be the sort of thing that will get me into it. That's kind of how I got into like Bob Dylan and stuff. Didn't really like
Just
Bob Dylan.
Just watch Purple Rain.
Well, that's not a documentary though, is it?
Yes. That all really happened.
But, you know, if you've ever heard, you know, anything about Prince, particularly the Kevin Smith bit about it, you know, apparently there's like albums and albums and albums and stuff that have never been released and music videos that have never been released, so it'd be super interesting to see how they kind of use that in a documentary.
Actually, it's funny you say that because I was on Discogs the other day and I was like, I wonder what the most expensive record they've ever sold is. And it's actually a Prince record called The Black Album that he recorded. And then, like, apparently something weird happened in his life and he thought the album was cursed. So he pulled the record and they only printed 300 copies in Europe.
Wow.
Which were then instantly recalled and only a few copies actually survive. But it's never, it never got officially released. He recorded the whole thing, it's all done. And it was, like, into pressing and then something happened. He was like, nope. It's cursed.
Wow. Yeah, so just reading about it now, yeah, there's only promotional copies that exist.
Wow.
That's it. I can't actually find a number, but
yeah it went for $30,000 on Discogs.
Wow.
Sealed.
I'm actually outrageous. Surprised.
So no one's even heard it because it's sealed. Crack the seal on that one.
Yeah, 100 European promotional copies exist in circulation. And that's it.
Mad.
Wow. We could probably get one between us.
Sure.
Let's do it.
Solid investment that. But that's the thing. Yeah, I think he was. I'm sure I've seen some documentaries about like him recording, and I think his whole workstation was set up with like a microphone in the middle, so he never had like a vocal booth. He'd literally play guitar, like at the you know the recording desk, and then he'd just be like, right, now I'm going to just lay down some vocals, and he'd do it all from the studio desk. Wouldn't be like, oh, I'm going to go in like a vocal booth and then like, and yeah, apparently like hundreds and hundreds of hours of recordings in the vault, which is what they've been like. That was the whole thing after he died. They were like, who owns the recordings?
Yeah.
Like, do the record company own it? Do his family own it? They were trying to like break in and like basically find out how much music is in there.
So I've just been doing a bit more reading on the Black Album. So it is, you can listen to it. It's not like no one's ever heard it. So what happened was it was essentially re-released on Tidal in 2016. So it is out there.
Oh, I might have to go and listen to it then.
But yeah, the other thing the Wikipedia says is, you know, it has the information. $42,000was one of those copies.
And it's also cursed.
Yeah, I mean, you can't listen to it because it's cursed, obviously.
There's a Simpsons reference in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Ugh. Anyway, moving on and back round to guitars and coming over to you, Mark Packham.
Hello there.
Let's talk about Paris.
PRS guitars, Paul Reed Smith guitars. So this has been, this isn't Paris. News. I'm looking at the press release now, and it was 24 days ago that this bit of news was released.
It's, this has been sitting on our news list for some time.
And when you consider
for
that
some time.
This guitar is limited to 50 pieces in Europe, there may not even be any left. Talking about the S2 Studio, which is a guitar I think the PRS did a little while ago and have re-released it, like I said, in this limited run. It is essentially the kind of PRS double cut shape, as you'd imagine, the S2 series, so the American made, but not the kind of top tier, well, not even the top tier, but not the full American series, as they're kind of affordable American guitars. I really, really like the look of these. The reason being that they're all kind of plain top, so you get a, like there's a white, a black, kind of frost blue. I don't actually have the finish name. So yeah, frost blue. Yeah, so you've got antique white, black, frost blue. There is also a sunburst.
Oh, it's a lovely sunburst. Yeah, it's a very tasteful two-tone.
Exactly. No flame top or anything like that. So these are kind of like PRS guitars for people that don't normally get along with the kind of PRS traditional, you know, super glossy, super sunbursty, super flamey look. They're much more kind of subtle than that. They've got the trem bridge on there, and the pickup choice is very, very interesting as well. So you've got the Starler kind of open coil humbucker in the bridge, and then two, what they call type D single coils, essentially, you know, like the D'Armond style single coil in the middle and the neck. And what that does is it means that you've got seven,
like mini humbucker sized single coils.
Very much that kind of D'Armond style pickup. And what having those pickups in there, what it opens up is seven different pickup configurations, because you've got the blade five way, and then you've got a push pull for coil split on the bridge humbucker. So yeah, lots of different combinations. I guess that's, you know, one reason it's called the Studio is because it's a huge range of tones in there. But yeah, overall the takeaway is that, you know, if you're not normally into the look of PRS guitars and you're, you know, your thing is much more kind of vintage, much more subtle, actually I think that you would get along very, very well with these. So hopefully they've not sold out already. Hopefully there's still some left, and if you're listening to this, you might want to go and pick one up. The other news from PRS only came out a couple of days ago. This is actually referring again to, well, actually to the acoustic line of guitars, this time, the SE Parlor. So this is basically PRS's kind of small body Parlor kind of body size in the SE range, so it's affordable. I guess this is going head to head with things like, yeah, GS Mini or some of the smaller Martins. I actually don't have a price here.
I don't know. You're gonna hear it here first. These look amazing.
Yeah, not these something that I expect you to say with PRS, because you're not normally a huge PRS fan.
These are lovely Parlors, especially the plated black-topped Parlor.
Definitely.
Which they still give rosewood back and sides to. So it's got that lovely,
yeah, really
like
nice
retro two-tone look. I kind of wish it didn't have the PRS birds on the fretboard, but I sort of think it works with an understated acoustic. It has a sort of a more Elvis cool sort of thing to it, rather than looking a bit blingy as I think it does sometimes on the electrics. I actually even think the headstock works on an acoustic.
Yeah, the definitely the black one with the natural sides is the one that I would go for. They're all mahogany, even the ones that have got like the painted tops. There's obviously the natural mahogany version as well. And yeah, they look really nice. You know, for me, would it be my choice of a Parlor? Probably not, because, you know, I want something that's a bit more kind of stripped back. But if you're looking for something that's a bit more PRS, I guess, in this kind of space, then this is definitely the guitar to go for. Price wise, looks like $579.
What?
So that £400. They're selling four in the UK.
Oh my goodness. That is fantastic. Because you think at a price like that, they're kind of the same price as the Art and Luthery Parlors, the Canadian Art and Luthery Parlors, of which I have.
And that's kind of what I'm saying, is that, you know, if you want to go down a different route to something like that, because the Art and Lutheries and Seagull and stuff like that are very much that kind of stripped back, you know, very kind of thinner finish on there.
Absolutely.
Whereas these bring some of that kind of PRS bling to the to the Parlor space. And yeah, I like it. Like you say, the black one with the natural sides looks awesome.
Absolutely gorgeous. And a fantastic price point. And of course, you know, Parlor Acoustics, easily and happily the coolest size body shape acoustic. Yeah, they are very cool. Someone's adding notes but not specifying who they are.
Sorry, that was me.
So well, let's pass across to you, Jay Cross, because you've got something you want to talk about.
Yes, so I can't believe I didn't include this right at the start, but something very exciting that completely caught me blindsided this week was the announcement of the new book by Robert Johnson's stepsister, whose name is Annie Anderson. So she is in her 90s now, and she has just written a book, some memoirs about growing up with Robert Johnson as her brother. And that's, you know, cool in itself. And I would be into that, and I would buy that book and I'd read it and I'd love it anyway. But what's more incredible about it is, and I cannot tell you how excited I was and how dumbfounded I was when I first saw this. I literally stood up and just I yelled, like, what? I can't say what I yelled on the podcast, but let's just say my girlfriend was very concerned for a moment, and then I showed her this and she didn't care, but it's fine. Annie Anderson, stepsister of Robert Johnson, has just been sitting on a picture, an unseen picture of Robert Johnson for the last like 80 years, basically. Now, this is important because for a couple of reasons. One, Robert Johnson is one of these kind of, you know, mythical figures. He is a true guitar icon and a real cornerstone of modern music. You know, he was making blues music in a way that not really people had done before to the proficiency in which he was doing it. And there's only ever been two photos of him that have ever been verified of him. There's one of him in a like a photo booth smoking a cigarette. And there's another one of him wearing a pinstripe suit in the corner of a room playing guitar. And his hands just look absolutely enormous. And it's incredible. And Annie Anderson has just been sitting. And I absolutely love this. She's just been sitting on this photo of him for 80 years. Despite the fact that she knows that there's only two photos of him that anyone's ever seen. She's just like, oh yeah, I've got one, but you know, it's fine. It's my brother. I'm just going to keep it. It's fine. It's just for me to look at. But this new picture of him is just, it's incredible. So it looks like it's from the same photo shoot as the photo of him sat in the booth smoking a cigarette. But you just see this completely other side of him. He's smiling. He is like, he's looking straight into the camera. He's so emotive. And you just see this kind of friendly side to him that like maybe people haven't experienced before. And I mean, I absolutely love the Delta Blues stuff. I just think all of that music is so raw and emotional, and just as well as that, it's such an impressive thing to think about in terms of what was going on there politically and socially, and just what it did in terms of moving music forward in a way that, you know, really hadn't happened before ever. I just think that the Delta Blues is such an important era of music, and Robert Johnson is far and away the leading figure of that era and that style of music. And for there to be this new picture of him, which I realize sounds a bit like daft, that I'm making such a big deal of this, but it is a big deal. I think it's incredible, and yeah, it's really exciting, and I'm really looking forward to ordering the to buying the book, and I think that everyone should check it out. But yeah, like, I'm sure everyone who's listening to this podcast is aware of Robert Johnson, but he recorded fewer than I think it's 27 songs he recorded, and they laid the groundwork for what became blues music for 100 years to come, and it's really just an incredible story.
Yeah, I was when that news story came out, I was reading, just went on the Wikipedia page, and it led to a guy called Don Law, who was the guy that recorded both those recording sessions.
Okay.
Who's from the UK, and he ended up, he was part of Columbia Records' country music division. He headed up their country music division in the end. And yeah, he produced Robert Johnson's only recording sessions. But it's just amazing. You think of the recording technology and everything then, and just, yeah, capturing those songs that, you know, I mean, I think Don Law passed away in the 80s, but at that point he was the only person who'd ever sat in those recording sessions and heard him play guitar at that point. You know, it's mad that there's probably very unlikely, apart from obviously his stepsister that's alive, that ever saw him play guitar.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. And, you know, he was kind of a younger person involved in that scene. Like there's talks about Charlie Patton, who you know, saw him play, and Son House, who saw him play, and Son House has got this. So the story about Robert Johnson is where you get this idea of selling your soul to the devil. That's where the whole idea of the crossroads came from, is all about this legend of Robert Johnson, and a lot of that comes from Son House, who's this other incredible Delta musician from the same era, who and Son House is an incredible character within himself, in the I'm struggling to remember which way around it is. My understanding is that he claimed he was too young to fight in World War One and too old to fight in World War Two. So he didn't fight in either of the wars. And those things aren't mathematically possible. There's no way that he could have been too young to do one and too old to do the other. I can't remember which way around it is, but it's like he in himself is like a really cool, weird character. But he is the one who reportedly spread this rumor that Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil, in that he saw him play guitar once and he was terrible, and then he saw him a couple of weeks later and he was amazing, when actually people have pieced it together. It was probably more like 4 or 5 years in between those two occurrences of him seeing Robert Johnson play guitar. Yeah, like that, the whole era is really interesting. And actually, I didn't know about, what did you say? Don Law?
Don Law, yeah.
So I don't know about that, but a really interesting story is about Alan and John Lomax, who were a father and son who spent a lot of time in the Delta in that era, in the late 20s and 30s and beyond, and recorded a lot of these musicians. So basically everything that Leadbelly did was recorded by John and Alan Lomax. And actually a lot of his recordings are from when he was incarcerated, because Leadbelly spent a lot of time in prison, both for murder and also attempted murder. And, you know, another like very interesting and crazy character. You know, they have a lot of, they've got a lot of, their reputation is built off of finding Robert Johnson, and a lot of some of the later musicians as well, like Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger and people like that. And there are a couple of people involved in this that, had they not been going and doing this thing, which probably didn't make the record companies a huge amount of money, we just would never have known about. Like, you know, we know about Robert Johnson, we know about Memphis Minnie and Leadbelly, and we know about Son House and Charlie Patton and people like that, but there must be just so many other musicians that we just didn't know about, because they were just born at a time when recording just was not possible.
I'm assuming they do, but there must be 78s left that you can buy of Robert Johnson. I'm sure they're probably rare.
I wouldn't have thought. Well, I mean, yeah, sure, there's probably originals somewhere. I actually have no idea. But yeah, I would have thought that stuff is available if you've got deep enough pockets, but they probably didn't press that many. You know, it wasn't a big money spinner, not really. Like I don't think anybody really started making any money out of it until people moved up to Chicago and started using electric guitars.
One went on eBay, a test pressing, for $711.
That sounds like, that really doesn't sound like a lot of money considering who it is, you know?
Yeah.
I was I was actually just reading about his guitar, because obviously the famous, there's the famous picture of him with the cigarette and guitar. They reckon it was a, because obviously people have said it's a Gibson L1.
Yeah, that's what his signature Gibson ended up being.
Yes, and then, but they're also saying that there was, the guitar he's holding in a photo where he has a cigarette in his mouth is also believed to be a Gibson Kalamazoo KG14, which some believed was the one that he used in the recording sessions, which was a budget brand that originally cost $12.50.
Fantastic.
In 1936, which he eventually lost, apparently, or was broken during an arrest.
Well, I mean, you know, the sad thing about Robert Johnson is he died. So another just like great little fact about him is he died age 27. So he was one of like the original 27 club. I mean, maybe that's not a great fact about him, but you know, it's an interesting, it adds to the legend. But you know, he never made any money. He died penniless and very, very sad end. But there's a good documentary on Netflix that is worth a watch if you're not familiar with the story.
It's 30 minutes long. It's you know, an easy watch, and it's very, very good.
And I think it's got his daughter in, or I think it's, or a grandson or something. There is a relative of some sort involved. I can't remember. I love Robert Johnson. I think the whole mystery around that era is amazing. And just a true cornerstone of what we do. He will be forever regarded as the absolute best for me.
Yeah, very cool indeed. Now, we are drawing towards the end of this week's free episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. You can, of course, listen to an entire extra episode over on our Patreon site, patreon.com/guitarnerds. This week on Patreon, as we mentioned at the start, Mark is starting his new podcast series, Gear There and Everywhere, where he's going to be telling stories all about Beatles gear through the ages over the next 4 weeks, is it, Mark?
Yeah, four episodes.
Four episodes, which is very lovely. And to become a Patreon supporter, it costs only $1 a month. A dollar will get you this episode ad-free and early every week. At the $5 tier, you can enjoy an entire extra episode every week. Plus, you get access to our entire back catalogue of now 500 on the nose. Well, this episode, when it comes out, makes it 501. At the time that you're listening to this, 501 episodes on the nose of back catalogue, which include everything from the Barcord series, the Friday specials, Gear of the Decade. It's all on there. And at the $10 tier, you can become an executive producer and enjoy all those benefits, plus the prestigious honour of having your name featured in our podcast outro song. You can follow us on all the major social platforms with @GuitarNerds. But, of course, do join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum. Currently being advertised on Facebook by Facebook as the place to go for guitar fanatics. So do join us there. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I love you. Gavin
Tom, Bellamy, Jake Gray, Blake, Wilde, and Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lawson, Hans, Sam, Steric, Rich, Rob, Murray, Steve, Buck, and Ginny, Short, 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 Shirella, Baca, Robin Smith, Brad Page, Andy McKenzie, Scott O'Brien, Mark Oregon, Will Glow, and Moon Gravit. The
hello and welcome to the 267th episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matthew Knight.
Tammy!
Mark Packham.
267 is too much.
And Jay Cross.
69, dudes!
Yes, absolutely.
67, dudes!
Hmm. Oh,
you didn't do that. Why did you do the intro in English?
I am going to start this again, guys, because I have been sent one.
So amazing.
I'm actually going to do it.
Keep this bit in, though. Keep this bit in.
Okay. I might put this bit in at the end or something after the credits or something. Anyway, I'm going to start it again and do it. Okay.
Okay.
Chech wit are itcher na guitar nerds. Just empir agnim gos pod. At Chem Joe Branton, I doyen chayum do, my yeah, Matt Knight, Mark Packham, I J Cross. Right, okay, that's what I'm doing. All right, okay.
What language is this?
That is Polish.
Okay.
Nice. Andrew Bimson's girlfriend is Polish,
nice.
And he sent it to me, and then he sent it again phonetically, so that I didn't have to go in. Which is pretty good.
Nice.
So yeah. So let's. okay. So let's. All right. Here we go.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.